Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson, and we're set as usual with our Sunday morning show at Northwest Federal. And there's a lot of baseball today. The Cubs will play their final game of the series with the Mets, and the White Sox will be winding up their series with Toronto. And the Chicago Blackhawks will be playing what could be the final game of the Stanley Cup Series unless they win it tonight. Friday night they lost a very, very tough game. They tied the game in the last half minute and then lost in 10 minutes of overtime. But Boston's got a powerful team, and it looks like the Montreal Canadiens and Boston are the best teams in hockey. We're going to talk baseball today with an old friend of mine that fellow I work for a number of years. He's had served in many capacities in baseball, but I think of all the people that I've known in 40 years of being in baseball myself, he's the most dedicated and perhaps the best informed man that I've ever met in baseball. He's got a line on ball players that nobody else in the country has. So we're looking forward to an interesting visit here with an old friend, Frank Lane, who is now the chief scout for the California Angels. And I'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest this morning, and we're delighted to have him, is Frank Lane, who, as you recall, was general manager of the White Sox at one time. He made a lot of good deals. I think the best deal he made, in my opinion, he could have been locked up for. He got Billy Pierce and $15,000 from Detroit for a catcher who was all through. That was Aaron Robinson. You remember that? Does your conscience ever bother you?
Well, Aaron was a good veteran catcher, and Detroit needed a catcher, and I needed a left-hand pitcher, and the $15,000 come in handy.
Did you make the Nellie Fox deal?
Yes, I did. I got Joe Tipton from Cleveland, and traded Joe Tipton to the Philadelphia Athletics. They were getting ready to option Nellie to Buffalo. But I had seen Nellie a couple years before that. I'd gone out to, I was president of the American Association, I was driving through Lincoln, Nebraska, and I stopped off at the ball game that night out at the fairgrounds. A little squirt playing second base and another little squirt pitching. The little squirt playing second base had a big chew of tobacco. It was Nellie Fox, and I was president of the American Association. I said, gee, if I ever had a ball club, I'd certainly like to have that little rascal. I said he'd be an exciting little ball player. A couple years later, I was the vice president of the Chicago White Sox, and I had my eyes set on Nellie, and Nellie had only been hit, had only hit about 240 with the Philadelphia Athletics, and they were getting ready to option him to Buffalo. So I made the deal. I gave Arthur Ehlers, who was then the general manager of the Athletics, Philadelphia Athletics, gave him Joe Tipton for Nellie Fox. It was a fairly good deal for us for 13 years.
Yeah, I think that was the best deal, one of the best deals the White Sox ever made. As a baseball executive, as well as your work as general manager, you were president of the American Association. How do you view the jobs that the commissioners have done since the day of Judge Landis?
Well, when you speak about Judge Landis, you ought to put a period right after it. There haven't been any since that time that have come anywhere near Judge Landis. Of course, the judge had experience in civil courts, and the courage and the sense to do things that his successors never come close to. I remember back in 1939, the convention was at Cincinnati, and Judge Landis had been, at that time, the commissioner of baseball, and I used to attend meetings. I was assistant to Larry McPhail, and they used to hold caucuses and say, well, throw that old so-and-so out. He hadn't got a cent in baseball. They're going to change. They're going to get a new commissioner. They didn't like it because the ball players would come to the judge instead of going to attorneys, which was the greatest thing could have happened to baseball, but they didn't realize at the time. So he opened the meeting on Monday, the Monday morning. The procedure always was that the major league clubs come there and put in their draft for minor league ball players. So the judge said, well, gentlemen, this is starting, we'll say the 29th or 39th session of the convention, and but before we enter in what the normal process of baseball, should be that your commissioner would be the one to preside. And I understand there's some discussion that they'd like to change the commissioners. And he reached in his pocket and he said, gentlemen, so you get somebody you might like. Here is my resignation. Well, the very people who had been the day before had been sitting in a meeting saying they're going to run him out. Oh, no, Judge. And that's what I think is prevails right now. They were afraid that if the judge was not disavowed and moved, that there'd be a reprisal. Well, nowadays I know that more than six owners are against Boy Coon, but they haven't got the guts enough to get up and stand and be counted. So he gets reelected because they're feared. There's a fear that if he stays in there, he'll take reprisal like he has on our good friend Mr. Finley.
Frank, what do you recall about some of the great names and some of the executives of baseball? And I know you've known them all. What about the great pair with the New York Yankees, Colonel Rupert and Beryl? What do you recall about those two gentlemen?
Well, I met them. My brother-in-law, who was in the real estate business in St. Petersburg and handled quite a few land deals for Colonel Rupert. I was sitting at Al Lang Field in spring training many years ago, and Colonel Rupert was there. Colonel Rupert didn't know anything about ball players, didn't profess to know anything about ball players, but he was a very generous man, except when he started signing up ball players. I remember Wade Hoyt, who was their fine young pitcher, he was holding out, he was trying to get a $2,500 raise, and the Colonel was paying him about $15,000 at that time. That was a big salary. And these multimillionaires of today, they turn up their nose at it. And finally, Rupert finally ended the conversation in his office in New York and said, wait, you must think I'm a millionaire. Of course, he was only worth about $40 or $50 million. And that ended the conversation. But what I have to pay a tribute to Phil Wrigley in this respect. If the other owners had handled their affairs the way Phil Wrigley has handled the affairs of the Cubs in this respect, these ball players coming and telling the owner what he has to give them. And Rick Mundy, who was one of my favorite ball players, but he was nosing around. He'd been getting about $80,000 or $90,000. They knew he was going to ask for $200,000, $250,000, so they'd get rid of him. Bill Madlock, the young third baseman whom the Cubs had got from us, I was with the Texas club at the time, and was getting $105,000, Mr. Wrigley. And I saw Bill Madlock later, and Bill said, gee, Mr. Laney, he said, Mr. Wrigley didn't even ask me what I wanted, but he said he let me go and traded me to San Francisco, which was a great deal for the Cubs, incidentally. And I said, well, Bill, Mr. Wrigley owned the ball club, and he felt he had a right to say how much he should pay. And when some employee was telling him how much he wanted, in other words, he would be dissatisfied if he didn't get it, he got rid of him. Now, if these other owners would follow what Mr. Wrigley has done, and I'm not really a follower of Mr. Wrigley in many ways, but in this particular phase, they would be faced with some of them with, I would say that some of them are going to go bankrupt. There's 26 major league clubs right now, and I would predict with some reason of knowing the background of some of these clubs and what they're obligated, their financial commitments, if they had to lay their cards on the table right now, of the 26 clubs, I'd say six right now would be bankrupt because they have commitments. Some clubs would not necessarily go bankrupt, but they'd get out, it'd be a matter of discretion to get out. I can't understand how the Milwaukee club, they got a fine veteran third baseman, Sal Bando, 34 years old, signed him a 3-year contract for about $500,000 for the 3 years, a total. And he has a deferred salary or money of 20 years at $40,000. That's $800,000, a commitment that has to be met somewhere along the line. And these ballplayers, the next thing they're going to do, Bob, they're going to start charging interest to these clubs on the deferred salary, on the deferred money. And they're help killing the goose that laid the golden egg. But the owners are permitting to do it, and they're accessory to it. They're accomplished to it. And definitely there's too much money that's going out of baseball and going into individuals' pockets. And the fellow at Brad Corbett at Arlington, Texas, he's obligated himself. For instance, Here's a little Bert Campaneris, 36 years old, signed him to a 5-year contract last year. Well, Bert is going to be the most expensive night watchman of that ballpark in about 3 or 4 years, because that's the only way he'll start earning out his money, because just having good common horse sense. And I do say I have to take my hat off to Mr. Wrigley. He had the courage, said, I own this ball club. I'll be the judge of how much to pay. If you don't like it, we'll get rid of you. Yeah. And fortunately, he had a good, astute baseball man like Bob Kennedy, and they made a very fine deal getting rid of Madlock.
Yes, they did. What do you recall about a man who played a great part in baseball in your time? He paralleled your time a little bit perhaps before you, but you were there when he was there. I'm referring to Branch Rickey.
Well, I tell you, if I learned anything from baseball, I learned of Mr. Rickey. I never worked for Mr. Rickey, but he used to use me as a sounding board. He'd stop off in Chicago and try different things on me that he wouldn't do with people that worked in his organization. But tremendous baseball man. He was 20 years ahead of the other operators. And as a consequence, they had no use for him. But he was a tremendous baseball man. Some of them would throw rocks at him, say El Cheapo and everything else. He never spent any money that he would agree to enter into something that wasn't a good thing for his ball club financially. Now, he would never enter into this free agent draft thing. The idea of, we have a fine, I'm with the Angels, as you know, and we have a fine young outfielder who was signed for 20 times as much as he was getting in Minneapolis. He was getting $20,000 in Minneapolis. We signed him for $450,000 a year for 6 years. And it embarrassed him so much. Lyman Bostock is a tremendous kid. He was embarrassed because he was going so bad. He hit 39 times up and got 2 hits. And he told Mr. Autry, the owner of the ball club, principal owner of the ball club, he said, well, I don't deserve to be paid. I'm not doing well enough to get paid. That's very refreshing. I'm afraid that not be many of them would follow his footsteps, but it does show that there's a lot of pride in spite of the fact some of these big sums these fellows are getting, being overpaid. There's no doubt about being overpaid, that they do want to earn the money. They have pride. They want base hits. No matter how much they're getting, you'll see after a ball game, you go in the clubhouse, those pros, even the big money, and if they've had a bad day, they feel bad. They don't say, well, I'm getting so-and-so. A lot of money, a lot more money than they're worth. But this fellow, Lyman Bostock, he was embarrassed because he wanted to do such a good job, because when he came to the club last winter, Gene Autry met him, went down, shook hands with him, said, I've been looking forward to you and everything else. And he was so delighted that here's a fellow that's a multimillionaire, was sat down and talked to him and put his arms around him, the welcome here and everything else. Made him feel welcome and didn't say, well, you're getting too much money. It was his fault. Nobody stood with a gun at Gene Autry's head and said, you got to sign this. But we were glad to get Bostock, and before the season over, we'll be glad that we have gotten him.
He'll pay off. Our guest today, we're talking baseball with one of the best informed men in baseball, and that's Frank Lane, who is a chief scout for the California Angels. Before we cut away, I want to get Frank prepared for my next question. And that is, there is all this talk about Bowie Kuhn, who is the present commissioner of baseball. I want to ask Frank Lane hypothetically. Frank, if it were possible today, let's say Bowie Kuhn was going to resign or was going to quit, who is there on the horizon that you think would make a good baseball commissioner for the game, for the fans, and for the players? You think about that, Frank, and we'll be right back in just a moment. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is an old friend of mine, Frank Lane, who, as I said, is the chief scout for California. Frank, what about it? Who is there on the horizon who would fill the bill as commissioner of baseball?
Well, I think, of course, I'm prejudiced, but I've known him since he's about 7 years old. Lee McPhail, who's the president of the American League. He's a very astute young fellow. He's brought up in the atmosphere of baseball. He's run ball clubs. He ran the Baltimore club. I was with him together 7 years at Baltimore. He was in the commissioner's office. And now he's the president of American League, and he knows baseball. And he, without any flair or flexing his muscles, I think he definitely would be a good successor to the Bowie Kuhn. And I'm in favor of a successor at an early age to Bowie Kuhn.
I asked this same question of another baseball man. Would you like to know who he suggested would make a great commissioner?
Yes, I would.
Well, he thought that the man who has all the qualifications necessary and the tact and everything else that's needed would be Howsam of Cincinnati.
No, I know Howsam too well to ever agree to that. I think Howsam's been a very good operator of the Denver club. He's a good operator of the Cincinnati club. Howsam is too well known, and his background doesn't foretell. I know Howsam for 35 years. He was a good operator, very successful one. But I don't think he'd stay put if the fire got too hot around his toes.
Frank, I know that you've hired many managers, and you've seen many managers in the big leagues over your many, many years of association with this great game. Who would you say is the number one manager in baseball today?
Well, the fellow that you're going to have a guest next week, Earl Weaver. I think he's the best manager in baseball. I was with him 6.5 years at Baltimore, and before and after that, I know him. I think he's definitely the most astute. In fact, he was one of the most disliked managers over at Elmira in the Eastern League, and at Rochester in the International League, and at Baltimore in the American League. The reason he was 2 and 3 innings ahead of the other managers. I think he's the best, no doubt about it, the best one in baseball.
Well, a lot of people certainly share your opinion. What about your opinions of the late Joe McCarthy?
Tremendous gentleman. I didn't know him that well. I was associated 1 year, 1956, when he was managing the Yankees, and I was the Yankees running their farm system out of Kansas City. But you could learn baseball just by watching his strategy on the field. For instance, he'd change his infield when 3 and 2 counts and various other things. A tremendous manager. And, of course, he managed the Cubs here. And tremendous manager. But the times have changed. I don't know whether he would be patient enough to put up with what present-day manager has to put up with.
Well, they say the same thing, and a lot of writers say the same thing about, well, if Judge Landis were alive today and if he were commissioner, we're living in different times, Landis couldn't handle it. It's hard for me to believe that.
He definitely would handle it, and he would. They know that he would not be as scared of his job. In fact, I saw him offer at a convention in 1939 his resignation, and the very ones who were holding meetings the day before wanted to get him out. Now they were faced with, and they reelected him for another 7 years. Definitely, it's hard to say what a man would do with his living, but his track record is such. I don't think he'd allowed for the present unholy alliance between Cleveland and New York. Here's the Gabe Paul is the general manager at Cleveland. He sends Chambliss over to New York 1 year. The next year he sends Greg Nettles. Next year and the following year, Gabe follows him to New York himself. Now Gabe has come back to Cleveland. Somebody said, "What's he coming back for?" He said, "Well, he must have left a quarter in a drawer in his desk at Cleveland." But actually, that if I was the commissioner of baseball, I would want to investigate that alliance. Here, why? Because the fellow, the present general manager, Phil Seege, was crying copious tears to me. He said, "What a job that Gabe Paul did on the Cleveland club." He said, "We got 4 pitchers for these 2 ball players, Craig Nettles and Chambliss, and 4 of the pitchers, 3 of the pitchers can't raise their arm to comb their hair." Now, if there's a commissioner, he would investigate that. That whole unholy alliance. Finley, I hold no brief for Finley. Finley's brought some of this stuff on him. But in these particular cases where commissioner has stepped in and acted both as a commissioner of baseball and acting his judgment on ballpark, the commissioner doesn't have a cent invested in baseball. And he has done more to harm baseball and the confidence of the public and the players and even the officials. He has hurt. He's been a detriment to baseball. I think he's a very fine attorney, and I don't doubt that what he's doing is what he thinks is his best judgment. But his judgment's not based on experience. When did he ever run a ball club? Now he's telling about the different values of ballpayers. This deal I made with the White Sox for the Angels this past winter, Lord, I worked on that for months. And here's Boy Coon. He steps in, doesn't know anything about the value of ballpayers, except he has the authority. He's like the cop on the beat used to beat somebody over the head, and he said, "Well, it isn't that I hate you, that I bait you. It's I just have the authority," and that's what he's doing to Finley. It's strange for me to be supporting Finley, But Finley's 100% right. When he owns the contract of these players, he should have a right to sell them.
Frank Lane, during your baseball time, while you were a general manager, you knew, and so did all the other baseball people, that baseball couldn't live with the reserve clause. Now, when it came time to end the reserve clause, as you and I knew it, why did the baseball people, the executives, the owners, the general managers, let themselves get shoved into a corner where actually they're really working for the ball players?
Well, the thing is that at the time, yes, the reserve clause was contrary to the law of the land. You can't sign a man up for life. You should be an annual contract or 3 years at a time, something like that. I had suggested long before the dissolution of the reserve clause, and you can see what's happening with they feared that if there's no reserve clause, this is exactly what happened. There'd be ball players jumping around different clubs, getting millions, and taking that much money out of baseball. But the thing is, what they should have done is like in the movie land. They used to sign up the actors and actresses to 7-year options, and they would exercise those options. And if they didn't exercise the option, they could be free agents. But they had to be a substitute for the reserve clause. Because what is prevailing right now is going to put 2 to 4 to 6 ball clubs out of business within 2 or 3 years.
How do you view the work that Marvin Miller has done for the players?
He's done a tremendous job. I'm no great advocate of Miller. I think sometimes he's overstepped a little bit, but he's done a good job for them. In fact, I suggested one time, I think, in fact, one Boston paper carried, I thought they ought to make Marvin Miller the commissioner of baseball and do away with Coon, because Miller is a very smart man and he's done a tremendous job for the ballplayers.
Turn things around a little bit.
it would certainly answer, because he's a most astute fellow, but he's going to come out all right. I see that they're busy getting together to make a bonus proposition to him. He's only served about 5 or 6 years now, or 7 years, whatever it is. He's going to be fixed for life. He does all right for Marvin Miller, but he's done all right for the ballplayers, and he's certainly entitled to it.
Now it's time to find out if this was a true story or not. I was at a press conference in the Congress Hotel here in Chicago when a military man walked in, and he became the new commissioner of baseball. Someone who supposedly knew, you know, Young in New York?
Yeah, Dick Young.
Yeah, Dick Young, who's a very, very fine writer, in my opinion, he said that the baseball people were mixed up, that it was supposed to be some other general.
Well, Bill Veeck answered it very well. He said that he was the unknown general. Actually, General LeMay was offered the job of being commissioner. He's a big man, and I guess in the Sears and Roebuck Company, and he turned it down, and he recommended a General Zuchert. So it would seem that Eckert was not only the unknown soldier, he was a typographical error, because Zuchert was in Washington, wanted to know why he hadn't been notified, and he picked up the paper and found that Eckert has made the commissioner. And Eckert was honest enough to tell these people that he'd only seen about 5 games of professional baseball. So Veeck had said, well, Eckert was not the unknown soldier, he was the typographical error.
Oh, that's really a great story. That really is. Well, your California club now, they're doing very well. They look like the way Texas has fallen apart, and it looks like you fellows could win it.
Well, we're a little short on hitting, but we do have good defense and pitching. Actually, the name of the game is defense. The team that makes the fewest mistakes wins the most ball games. You go along and hold them in check for 8 innings, they'll make enough mistakes that you can beat them.
In the deal you made during the winter with the White Sox, some of the writers suggested that you'd been taken.
Well, not some of them, all of them. But we needed pitching, and I didn't know anybody that had more good young arms that might be available than Bill Veeck, so we gave him Bobby Bonds, who was doing a good job for them. He had a tremendous year with us, and we got 2 good pitchers and got a good catcher. So I think it's a pretty good deal for Veeck, and it was a pretty good deal for us. I think that we'll win 12 to 15 more ball games we did last year.
Well, that should do it.
Yeah. Well, the writers here and the writers in Los Angeles said, I don't know how the devil you could give up Bobby Bonds. And I said, well, it wasn't easy, because there was 26 major league clubs, and in spite of the good record that Bonds had with us, There's only two clubs showed any interest at all. That was the Chicago Cubs, and Bob Kennedy pulled out before we could pull the trigger on him. And Vec used his discretion where he can rent them for at a cut price of 20%. And that's the only two clubs that showed any interest. Now, if Bonds was such a tremendous ball player, I was surprised and disappointed. I was afraid we were going to be stuck with him, because if we had not dealt him, we would let him play out his option and let him go, because he's got $500,000 in his mind per year for 5 years, and he's 32 years old. We didn't want to have that expensive night watchman at $500,000 a year.
Our guest today is one of the best informed men in baseball, Frank Lane, former general manager of the White Sox and now the super scout for the California Angels, and we'll be back in just a moment. Frank Lane, one of the most controversial people in baseball today, he's got a ton of money, I guess he made it in the shipping business, is Steinbrenner of the New York Yankees. You think that he and Martin and Jackson can make it through another season?
I don't know. I hope so. Steinbrenner has been most liberal with the ball players, and certainly liberal with his assistants. And if Martin isn't first place by the 4th of July, Martin better look for another job. But Steinbrenner spent a lot of money. He's got the best team that money can buy, but he's done a very dangerous thing. He's given long-term contracts to pitchers, and nobody knows better than we do, and you and I, pitchers' arms are very fragile things. You can sign them for 5 years, but that doesn't say they're going to be able to pitch for 5 years. He's got Catfish Hunter getting paid at the rate of about $350,000 a year, and Catfish is just going through the motions now. He's going to pitch, I think, today.
Or he pitched yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah. And pitched yesterday. And pitchers' arms are a very fragile thing. We're very much worried about Tanyana. He's a tremendous pitcher. He had a sore elbow. He didn't pitch the last month of the season last year. Nolan Ryan. I couldn't see a signing pitcher for more than 2 years. The fella Garland that Cleveland signed for 10 years at a cost of over $3 million, I think caused them to change the ownership of the ball club. But I can't see them giving long-term contracts to pitchers.
Frank, thanks very, very much for being our guest today and for the informative things you've told us. I've enjoyed it, and I know our listeners have enjoyed it. And good fortune to you and your ball club, the California Angels. Remember, there's baseball today at Wrigley Field, the final game of the series, and also tonight at the Chicago Stadium hockey, the Stanley Cup playoff game. Boston has a big advantage now. They're going into the game tonight having won 3 games, and the Blackhawks have lost 2 very, very tough games. And they have to win tonight. The Blackhawks must win to continue the series, or it's all over. Anyway, have a nice day. And remember, Earl Weaver, the manager of the year in the American League, will be our guest here next Sunday. So Bob Elson saying goodbye now until that time.